My name is Rebecca Nutt Brown, and I am head of metrology for medical physics at the National Physical Laboratory.
Okay, right. So you're developing these things called phantoms to create realistic models of organs, right?
That's correct, yes.
So my first question is, how effective are these at mimicking organs?
That's a very good question. We need to be able to mimic, to build organs that mimic the human body for various different types of treatments and imaging modalities. So your body reacts differently to radiotherapy as it does to ultrasound. So we need to be able to build parts of the body. So it's not just the organs, it could be a head and neck, it could be a torso, that reacts to what we're interrogating or treating the phantom with in different ways. So they're very specific to that modality. And at the moment, the phantoms don't move. So they don't actually mimic the human body that well, because the human body moves a lot. You know, as we breathe, our lungs move, but there's lots of movement going on that we're not even aware of. And at the moment, the phantoms that we are manufacturing are static, but we're looking towards how we mimic the human body in its motion as well.
So how would you do that with a 3D printer?
That would be quite challenging. So you would print part of the phantom, and then you would insert... You can leave, when you print an object, you can leave out sections. And so you could actually put in a lung part, for instance, which you would then potentially, you could inflate and deflate. But that part itself wouldn't actually be printed by the 3D phantom, the 3D printer itself.
Okay. So in that spirit, how much are you relying on the 3D printers? If you know that down the line, you're going to have to leave them by somewhat. Can these be perfectly relied upon to replicate living tissue?
So, yeah, it depends what you're looking at. So, for instance, what we've been focusing on so far hasn't been around printing lung, it's been around printing bone. So bone doesn't move. And so the initial challenges with the 3D printing have been around how do you print bony material within a tissue-like material, and that's actually quite challenging. Even being able to print a bony-like material, we have achieved this now, so we can actually take a CT scan of a phantom that we've developed and see the bony material within the tissue. So another option is then also, how do you print scaffolds where you can actually have cells, print cells within the scaffold. So you're actually not just looking at plastic tissue, how plastic tissue reacts to the treatment, but actually having cells in there and being able to monitor how the cells react.
Okay, so how much work have you done on the bones so far?
So we actually have a 3D printed mouse. So in the UK at the moment, there's a lot of research done at the cellular level, looking at how cells react to radiation. And there is also a certain amount of animal work that goes on in the UK and worldwide, looking at how particularly mice react to radiation treatments. And in fact, there's actually very sophisticated miniaturised linear accelerators that actually can mimic the type of treatment that a patient gets in a hospital, and you can deliver that on a much smaller scale to a mouse. Obviously, we want to minimise the number of mice that are used in this type of experiment. It's not great to be experimenting on animals. So MPL is really keen to get the most information with the least amount of animals used. We don't actually do this at MPL ourselves. What we do is we print plastic mice that we can mimic the treatment on, and we can check that the treatment is being delivered correctly before it then goes on to being used in a research centre on a real life mouse.
So how much will that actually reduce the amount of mice being used?
Actually, it can have quite a significant effect, because at the moment the the protocols, the guidance, there is no guidance, basically, on how to irradiate not just small animals, but cells. And so the clinical trials that are being carried out, it's very difficult to get good information from them that can then feed into being able to deliver better treatments to patients. So actually, it's not just about the number of animals that we can reduce from being used in animal experimentation. It's also about getting better data out at the end of the trial as well, because at the moment, the underpinning research around it isn't good enough.
So what are your predictions for how much you think you can improve this?
In terms of uncertainties, so at the moment, it's difficult to know. We don't actually know how large the uncertainties are at the moment in the research departments, but we expect they are between 20 to 50% uncertainties. We want to bring that much closer to the 5% level. So in the UK, we expect to deliver every radiotherapy treatment in the UK should be delivered to within plus or minus 5% to every patient. So that would be our goal. So we're talking about a factor of 4 to 10 reduction in the uncertainty.
That's pretty good. Okay, so my question now is, where's the bit in the press room? But basically it says that you'll be delivering more consistent results. How consistently will a 3D printer be able to deliver the results?
So when we 3D print a phantom that mimics a human body, we can't automatically rely on the printer having exactly printed what we expect. So we would have to image that 3D phantom using various different techniques. But those images need to be standardised so that we trust the images. So there's a whole process that we need to go through in terms of firstly building the phantom, then we need to image it and we need to verify that that image is correct. And then once we have that, we would use that phantom as a standard. So we wouldn't be printing off lots of phantoms and expecting them all to be the same. We would have one phantom that would be sent around a number of centres, and that would become the standard phantom.
Okay, so how much variation on that could there be?
On between different phantoms and how it very much depends on how much the printer we spend on a printer. It could be a few millimetres, or it could be sub-millimetre precision.
Okay. So is there a possibility, because of the way different bodies react in different ways, you could get two consistent results, that you could end up having too much of a perfection that doesn't deliver the variation within animals and people?
I see your point. So that's a very interesting point, actually. So something that is being done more and more is making phantoms that mimic different types of people. So you might have a male phantom or a female phantom, or actually a paediatric phantom. So in the UK, we are just about to open two new proton radiotherapy centres at the Christian at UCLH, and they will be very much focused on treating children. So it's really important that in this case we build phantoms that replicate paediatric anatomy.
So how close are you to be able to do something like that?
We have PhD students working on this type of work at the moment. Proton and the conventional X-ray radiotherapy are quite different, so you have to have different materials that you use to make these phantoms. So we've been developing materials that mimic water and tissue and bone, and then we will put those together to create phantoms that will mimic parts of the parts of a child that would are standard treatments, form standard treatments.
Right. So, I presume there's a lot of barriers to actually doing any experiments on children at the moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So this really could open up something completely new.
What we can do is with these phantoms, we can check. Firstly, we can check that the radiation is being delivered to the right place, to the tumour. And we can check that it's also not being delivered to the healthy tissue, which is what we're trying to do with protons. But also what you could do is use it to check other modalities to see that the best, what is the best treatment to give this child. So absolutely, that gives you that flexibility before you actually come to treating a child.
How many can be made, and on what sort of time scale are we looking at?
So we'll never go into large-scale production of these phantoms. They're very much a research tool, or a tool that we use to verify treatments. So we're not looking to make lots of them, put them in the shops and sell lots of them. We're looking at how we can use them to deliver most impact. So how can we verify that these new types of treatment that are being used are safe and effective? Having a large-scale production of them isn't the aim. It's actually to be more flexible in what type of phantom we're able to produce.
Okay, so you say in this press release, or the notes surrounding it, preclinical studies are affected by a lack of standards and guidelines needed to ensure accurate, consistent doses of radiation are delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the problems with radiotherapy at the moment?
So this is actually talking about a specific problem with preclinical research. So even before you get to treating a patient, you need to understand how tumour cells or normal cells react to the radiation. And then, as I mentioned previously, how they that studies are then taken into small animals. But at the moment, that research is carried out in universities, not in hospitals. And actually, there is less rigour around the amount of radiation that is delivered to these cells and to these animals than there is to a patient. Because of that, the underlying research that we're conducting in preclinical studies isn't as reliable as we would like, and that's informing how we treat a patient. So it's really important we get that bit right so that we're actually going on to give the best treatments that we can to patients. When you come to treating a patient in a hospital, there is a huge amount of guidance and protocols around how you would treat a patient, so that's extremely safe.
Okay, how much does each one cost?
A phantom?
Yeah.
The phantoms themselves, materials, are very cheap. The printers, I think we're looking at one at the moment, which is probably about £80,000. And then obviously there's a lot of staff time that goes into the research. But actually the materials to make the phantom themselves are pennies, I would have said. Not very much at all.
Pennies?
Yeah, the material is very cheap.
How can you use such cheap materials? Like, this is just from a perspective.
Well, it depends on how much of material you're buying. If you're buying in bulk, then it's obviously very cheap. But, I mean, smaller amounts of material will be more expensive. But it's not actually the material itself that is expensive. It's the process and the printers themselves.
Okay. Mm. So surely that means you could increase production to a fair amount.
We could, and there are companies. There is a company in Greece that they do a 3D printed phantom for every patient that is treated. This is a service that they offer, and that is certainly something that you potentially could do, but it's about what benefit you get from that. We feel that there is more benefit in more rigorous testing of a specific particular type of treatment rather than doing it on a patient per patient basis.
Okay, that's interesting. So is there anywhere in the UK that's going to be looking to take this model from Greece and apply it, or is that something that seems a bit strange?
I think there is a little bit of interest in the UK. I'm not aware of anyone having taken it up yet. It's a potential.
You have the statistic 50% of us will get cancer in our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that seems quite high.
It is quite high, yes.
I mean, almost... I mean, what data is that based on?
So that's actually CRUK data. And the full statistic is one in two of us are born after 1960 will develop cancer at some point in their lifetime. But what we have to remember is the most important thing about cancer is if you catch it early, it's more treatable. And so the earlier you catch it, the better the patient outcomes. And so we're really about, we're very interested in how do we detect cancer earlier. And in fact, we are very fortunate to have got through to the second round of a CRUK Grand Challenge, looking at how do we detect cancer earlier. And that's not just looking at medical data, because there's a huge amount of data around people that we have access to, and it could be somebody's shopping data, it could be their internet searches, it could be Twitter feeds, there's all sorts of information that we need, if we could access securely, we may be able to make earlier predictions of cancer and nudge people to go to their doctors earlier to seek advice, and actually be able to provide tools to the GP to recognise that patient actually possibly has cancer and should go into the health system. And we really see that's where the delays are at the moment. So this is a project that we've proposed, and we're putting a submission together at the moment that we'll put forward to CRUK in May.